Stephanopoulos is down in Lower Manhattan today. George, I don't know if you heard a little earlier me raise this question, which was actually raised by ABC's Jackie Judd, as we look at these areas down below and the video of where the towers used to stand and where is all the rubble gone. And is there any way you can answer that question?
I'm sorry, Peter, I didn't get the question.
Okay, I apologize. Jackie Judd and several other people keep asking us, when you look at where the towers used to stand, there is surprisingly so little rubble. Where did all the rubble go?
It's a very good question, Peter, and I have asked some people who've been doing some of the rescue and recovery work this morning. If you look behind me, you can see the very remains, the skeletal remains of the World Trade Center. And one volunteer, Robert Gerlinski, explained to me the reason there's so little rubble is that all of it simply fell down into the ground and was pulverized, evaporated. One of the most interesting notes I should add, Peter, is that from the volunteer workers I've spoke to said there has been very little recovery of bodies. I know we heard overnight about the very good rescue stories, five or six people found alive. But for the most part, they haven't found any bodies at all because the recovery workers feel they're buried so deep into the rubble.
Okay, George, many thanks indeed. George Stephanopoulos, are either one of them there at the moment? Okay. We're waiting to talk at some point. This is George Stephanopoulos answering the question, I hope, for many people who've asked it, about why there is so little rubble on the ground. And we'll reconnect with him as quickly as we can. And because, as we watched it so many times on television in the last 25 or 26 hours, when these two huge buildings, 110-story buildings tall, fell unto themselves, much of the material that makes up the structure of the building was simply pulverized.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. This is a special, a 9/11 special, coming to you on the 10th of September, 2024. And I'm really delighted to be joined by documentary filmmaker Simon Shack, all the way from the Eternal City, La Bella Roma. Simon, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, Gemma. And thanks for inviting me again. It's nice to be on your show again.
Well, it's absolutely great to have you, Simon. And we've been relaunching your fantastic September Clues documentary. I have it on my website today. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are seeing it for the first time in Ireland, and it's doing very, very well. So it is, in my opinion, the definitive documentary about 9/11. And we're going to get into that, and you're going to, you know, remind us and refresh our memories on some of the things that you uncovered. You're being joined by, I know you are Swedish, Simon, obviously living in Italy, and you're joined tonight by some of your friends who are visiting Rome, visiting you from Sweden, is that right?
Yes, they've come to visit me for a week, like a little vacation here, and they say hello, hello. Hello. They say
hi to everyone. Hello.
I think they're all around me in the studio now, and we are looking together. And
fantastic.
And they are all very much, you know, they've been following my research for years and September Clues, and but they've come specifically. I think. I mean, more. I mean, the thing that really is important for us now is. I mean, these four new friends I have in Sweden, I think they've come to know me through my Tycho's research, which we are not going to talk about tonight. But that's what I'm doing now. My September Clues research goes back all the way to 2007, 2008. So it's an old baby for me, you know. It's
absolutely
something that I've been doing for many years. And unfortunately, YouTube banned the 12 versions in 12 languages of my movie, September Clues, in 2018. So suddenly they all disappeared from YouTube.
And I'm
still allowed to have my website up, fortunately.
Yes, which is Clues Forum. Isn't that right? Cluesforum.info.
That's the discussion forum, but the main website, which many people apparently don't realize, It's called septemberclues.org.
Okay, right. So we'll have to change that on your.
Oh, it's up on the under the title of Clues Forum. You can.
Okay, it's there. Yes. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that is quite
on the left hand side. On top left, you have a link to the original site where I have made my, you know, my main articles, which where I put together the sum of the research I had done between 2007 and 2014. But it's still up, and all you can, you know, if you scroll down a little, you can see the 12 versions in 12 languages. I was lucky enough to have 12 people helping me out. You know,
fantastic.
Italian subtitles, French, German, Portuguese, Russian, Slovak, Spanish, Korean, Esperanto, Farsi. All of these were suddenly all banned in the same moment around March 2018 with the motivation that it was violating the norms, YouTube terms of... service for hate speech.
So of course
they are qualifying. It's just an image research. I'm there's no politics in my movie. I'm just showing how what was aired on the various networks in America, mainly, you know, CNN, CBS, Fox, and NBC. So,
and that is the trust. That is the trust of your documentary, really. That is the main.
Yes, the documentary is all about what was aired on TV. Then on the forum, we have gone much further on and looked at other things. But my, you know, this 90 minutes documentary is all about what we were shown on TV and just analyze it step by step. And I think many people will understand when they see if they take time, a lazy Sunday afternoon to look at the movie, they will see that all those images are very, very cartoonish and they are not real. They are all made. It's basically a Hollywood movie that they prefabricated and they sent it as, you know, they pass it off as live news. I know this is hard for many people to grasp how they could do that, but this is the only conclusion.
Sure. And your position obviously is the one that is, you know, it's the unmentionable, because we have the truth industrial complex, who are the fake opposition, controlled opposition, like UK column, UK column, I call them. Yes. And they will go as far as saying maybe, you know, that there were no planes, that these were controlled demolitions. But we believe, and that your thesis is, that there was no victims, there were no people in those towers, nobody was injured and nobody died. And I mean, this is this idea that nobody dies in these so-called mass terror events is becoming more and more acceptable. And yes. So you were really ahead of the curve, but we've seen it with Manchester, the Ariana Grande. We've seen it here in Dublin, where we had some fake mass stabbings last November. It's now turned out that there was nobody involved in no deaths there. So whenever we see these mass casualty events, mm-hmm. now we need to go, our automatic position needs to be, well, nobody has died until it can be proven otherwise. And it generally cannot. So, yes. Just go back to Peter Jennings' comments there at the very beginning about the rubble, mm-hmm. and their explanation being that everything was pulverized. Well, everything was pulverized except the hijackers' passports. They managed to survive.
Yes.
Amazing. So just talk us through maybe, you know, the rubble, the lack of evidence of any bodies on the ground. You know, they're just not there. And all of the things that are missing in the rubble.
Yes, well, the question of the rubble is really, you know, it's so contradictory. The official story about what the rubble looked like, some say there was no rubble, some say, but then in 2010 we got lots of new imagery coming out, never seen before imagery of the rubble. So there was lots of rubble. It wasn't pulverized. according to this imagery of 2010, which was released suddenly out of the blue, apparently because ABC, they told us as ABC, the news network, made a request, a FOIA request to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, telling them, "Hey, you're sitting on lots of videos that people would like to see, so please release it." So in 2010, 9 years later, suddenly we have a big 4.7 gigabyte file released to the public, which of course I downloaded immediately. And suddenly we get lots of much nicer and crisper imagery on YouTube, and people, you know, that's the modus operandi they do when they do these psyops. Just like when they did the moon landing, they showed us very crappy imagery first, but then in 1990, they came out with perfectly clear and crisp and high-resolution images that had never been seen before. So this is what they do usually. So what I did, there was so little imagery between 2001 and 2010. There was very, very little imagery of the tower collapses, almost nothing about the rubble. For 9 years, we didn't have any, you know, we had the imagery, of course, of the planes apparently crashing into the towers, or the second plane, because the first only has one video. And so if I can share my screen, should I share my screen now? Maybe? You're seeing it now, aren't you?
Sorry, my mic was muted there. Yes, I've added it there, yeah. So you work away, Simon.
So this is my screen, and I can operate it from,
See. You can operate it there directly. We're sharing. Just to say to people in the live chat, if you have any questions for Simon, make sure to put them in there, and I'll try to ask him. Mm-hmm. Okay, welcome to everyone in the live chat.
Okay. So what do you see now on your screen?
Just blank. I think you've lost your tabs there, have you? It's just a blank screen.
Oh, okay.
So you might need to just go back.
What I can do.
Simon, how did you first get into
It's not blank. Now it's not blank, right? You see?
No, that's it. Yeah, I can see all the tabs there. Yeah. No, that's perfect.
Can disasters be faked realistically? Do you see
that? That's it, yes.
All right. Okay. So this is working. But it's not animating. It's not moving, this picture. It's a GIF, actually.
Okay.
All right. Technical problems here. But anyway, this is just a GIF that I found on... This is just to show how... what it can do now. I mean, people should know that Hollywood can do anything, you know, fake disasters, making green screens and putting lots of stuff. It's a shame that the animation isn't working right now here, but because I want to show you what happens. You see the ship behind there?
Yes.
With the smoke, that actually disappears behind the green screen in this animation, because it has been added upon the scenery with the people and firefighters working around. So it's a montage.
And is that on your Clues forum? Is that on your website?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I can show it from there. But I think people do get the idea.
All right. Let's see if I can fix this problem here. It's a technical problem we have.
Oh, there it is now.
Oh, it's moving now? Is it moving?
Seems to be, yes. Yeah, it's moving now, yeah.
All right. Oh, okay, finally. Good. So this is what I wanted to show you. You see, this is just a very short clip showing how they can you know, fake anything, and it looks very realistic, doesn't it?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I wanted to start with this example because the problem with many people is everyone has seen lots of, you know, action Hollywood movies, and they should be used by now the technology that exists to do these things. So this is what the technology they use to fake absolutely everything of the 102 minutes of action on 9/11. And, you know, probably everything was filmed beforehand and then put together. So even the you know, street scenery with people running around and the towers collapsing behind was made in this way. Okay. Do you see now this other picture? This is...
Yes.
This is a rubble. This is from the 2010 imagery that came out 9 years later. And when I looked at this picture, which was one of the many pictures of... these are pictures apparently by a guy called Kurt Sonnenfeld, a guy who apparently... He had to flee to Argentina because he had made those compromising pictures. That was his story. So anyway, I looked at this picture and said, how strange. Those firefighters look much crisper than the rest of the picture, right? You see?
Yes.
Well, so I did, I did a little, you know, I have a video editor where you can apply this gradient map test, and which changes the various tones and colors and contrasts of the picture. As you can see, the firefighters remain always there, very crisp, and the whole background changes. Do you see, is it animated, this, for you?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, this is a slam dunk. This is a slam dunk demonstration that those pictures of the rubble were faked too. Even the rubble pictures, which came out later. I mean, this came out 9 years later. So are we going to talk about the rubble being pulverized? I mean, the towers being pulverized? No. I mean, we see lots of rubble in this picture. So there is this woman called Judy Wood, which all 9/11 truthers love so much, because she says, yeah, everything was pulverized. You know, they had some special secret weapon that pulverized the towers. But her task is to try to justify the fact that the towers collapsed top down and into a big cloud of dust. But that's physically impossible. That's not something that happens in the real world. So immediately now, I need to tell you what my theory is, which I think is the most logical. Every single picture you've seen of the towers collapsing is also part of the movie. So because they just raised lots of smoke, military-generated smoke. You have military smoke generators that can create lots of smoke over a whole town in a few minutes. It will cover a whole town, a whole city. And that's what they did. They had the smoke generators probably placed in Tower 7, which then collapsed in the afternoon, 5:30, when his job was done. It had finished gushing out the smoke, and they brought it down at 5:30. So it was a very simple, you know, kind of magic trick, David Copperfield trick. They needed to...
And they used a smoke screen. They had a massive smoke screen around the entire area.
Massive smoke screen, yes.
So nothing could be seen.
Yes. And you see, here is what they showed live. This is the only thing we saw live of the first tower collapsing. And it's very far away. It's very strange. I mean, look at those colors. It's very, very strange. It doesn't look like real photography. But then you have pictures that came out later. If you see my mouse here,
I do. Yes, we see that.
Very black smoke. Well, look at this other picture here. The smoke is completely white. It's chalk white here in this picture. And it's charcoal black in this one. So they make some enormous mistakes. This can't happen. This can be a problem of the setting of this camera or something. You can get white becoming black in such a manner.
And they do the same thing with the wings of the planes, don't they, as well? They get the colors wrong there.
Oh, we get there. We'll get to the planes.
We'll get to that.
But this is, and just to show the collapses we saw on TV, we're all familiar with these collapses, right? The towers explodes on the top and somehow destroys all the 100 floors below it. This can't happen in real life. It's physically impossible. But when did we see such a thing before? Well, we saw it in Independence Day. You see my mouse now here? Mm-hmm. This is a little shot from Independence Day where they show the Empire State Building being attacked by aliens, I think, you know. So the aliens have some ray, death ray that hits the top of the tower, and the Empire State Building falls down, top down. So they prepared us but this was in 1986, 5 years before 2001. So they used this kind of this technology to construct these pictures that we saw on TV.
So the seed is already planted in the public mind that there's been this predictive programming.
Yes. Hollywood plants seed regularly in people's minds all the time.
Prepare. So the shock isn't as great when it happens. It's nearly that they expect it and they believe it then to be true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you know, that we have spent so many years, when I say we, it's me and my colleagues, some were very, very good video and photography experts. And the conclusion is absolutely that there was no real imagery shown that day. And so again, people will say or will ask, what about the people then on the streets? Someone must have filmed the thing. Yes, what they filmed was lots of smoke. They couldn't make any, you know, sense of it or go and protest anywhere about. They just filmed lots of smoke. And in fact, what we do know, what is absolutely incontestable, is that lower Manhattan was covered in a huge smoke cloud from morning to dusk, since 9 o'clock to 5:30 when Tower 7 collapsed. All right? So let me show you. I want to show you. I should have. I show you what it looked like. Sorry if I interrupt you. This picture here, you see this?
Yes.
This is a picture. It could be real. I mean, here is the problem. I'm saying that all the images were fake, but of course they couldn't fake the whole day. You know, there was lots of smoke and people saw that enormous clouds of smoke. So this could be a genuine picture. But what do you see? An enormous cloud of smoke. And where does this smoke come from? Because when you demolish a building, it takes only 50 minutes and then the dust subsides. It doesn't persist for hours and hours and hours. This is artificially created smoke. It must be. There's no other answer to this incredible amount of smoke. You can build down a huge stadium made of concrete and you will see some smoke for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour maximum. But this view of Manhattan lasted for almost 8 hours. So just, you know, only this shows you that there was something strange going on. And what are those pictures I'm showing you now? These are from the History Channel. The History Channel came out many years later showing that the Tower 7 was gushing out smoke all day. Why was Tower 7 on fire? Well, there is actually no fires. It's only smoke. Well, they told us that some debris fell from the big towers
and hit diesel tanks of the Tower 7, and they took they were ignited, and so the Tower 7 started smoking. But that's a silly explanation. I'm quite convinced that people have been asking, where did they place these smoke machines? Well, they placed it in the most logical place imaginable. This tower was 47 stories high, almost half the towers, and it was standing right in front of them. So the perfect place to have smoke machines. So once the smoke covered the towers, they just pushed a button, and had conventional explosives, dynamite, destroy the towers. They pulled down huge buildings every day in America. It's no big deal. You don't need any secret weapons to pulverize. They don't exist. We don't know about it. Why would they have used a never tested weapon before in such an occasion? It would be madness. They use the most reliable explosives.
I'm just trying to think of the questions that people ask vis-a-vis the witnesses and the plane. So sorry to jump. Now I know we're on the smoke aspect, but people do say, well, what about all the witnesses that saw planes? I mean, most of them were from most of them were prostitutes, right? They were from the horror media.
Exactly. Every one of them were from the press. I have listed them in my movie, my main movie, September Clues. They are all media people who said live on, they had lots of people calling in, and it took some time for me to put a name on those people, and I found who they were. And there were like 45 people. They were all working for CNN, CBS, Fox, and etc. So they had their own colleagues saying that they saw planes.
So, and we really have to visualize ourselves, in that concrete jungle. What are the chances that you would have your phone, filming the sky at that particular moment? I mean, it's inconceivable.
There were no phones at the times with video capacity.
Oh, sorry, video. Sorry, video.
There were no phones with video
capacity. Or video camera.
I want to say this for the young listeners.
Very important.
People will say, oh, we all have video cameras in our phones. No, they didn't have that in 2001. So there would only be a few people who, for some reason, at 8 o'clock in the morning, were going around with a Sony Handycam, which was quite a rare thing to have. Not everyone went around with a video camera at the time.
And they just would happen to have those video cameras pointing at the sky at that particular moment. What are the chances of that? I mean, that
Gemma, they are saying that, yes, it was because the first tower was hit first, so that raised all the attention. And after 15 minutes, 17 minutes, another plane comes. So that's how they justify why so many people film the second plane. Because the second plane was filmed like 50 times. There are 50 clips. I've analyzed them all. And they're all contradictory with each other. They're all just crap. But what I'm showing you now is very important. This is the 16 seconds. These were the only 16 seconds that showed on live TV that morning, the arriving plane, the supposedly Flight 17, was called Flight 175. Sorry, Flight 175 was supposedly the second plane to hit the tower, and it starts with CBS. This is a loop going on. It's a GIF loop. So here, minus 17. We hear on all, and this is from my movie. In my movie, in 2007, I was wondering, because on ABC there was a loud beep beep at 17 seconds before the plane struck the tower. So I was interested to see, can I hear maybe that beep on other networks as well? And yes, I found that same beep beep in various forms, it's lower, at lower volume, on all four of the big networks. There was a beep beep 17 seconds before the tower struck the tower. You follow me? Yeah. As a little signal. It's like a synchronizing signal that they use usually to synchronize various videos with each other. So I put all the four, or actually five, CNN, CBS, Fox, etc., the five major broadcasts on top of each other on my video editor, and there I found the BP on all five. So, you know, you have to wonder, on two separate networks, how could they be the same type of sound on all five networks? Well, that's because, and that's what I only understood years later, that's because they had a 16-second sequence to launch at one exact point in time. So it was a signal to launch it, so it would be synchronized on all five networks. So I call it the 16-second magic sequence. So, I mean, look here, Gemma. How are we supposed to believe that all five American networks caught a little glimpse of the arriving plane? All of them. All five. They were very lucky. Of course, they were. Okay, they had the cameras. You would say that, yes, they apparently had, each of them had a chopper, a TV chopper in the air that morning. For some reason, they arrived before the military fighters. You know, the military fighters arrived later than the TV choppers on the scene. So for some reason, they woke up early and they were so amazingly efficient to be there. And then all of the four choppers of ABC, CNN, CBS, and Fox caught a glimpse of the towers. And then they were seamlessly, this sequence we're looking at now is seamless. You know, you can go from one network to the other and see just, the first 16 seconds to another number of seconds, and then all the way to the actual impact. It's very contrived. It can't represent reality. That's all I'm saying.
Impossible. Simon, can you tell us what was happening in the hours before and the day before in that specific area around the Twin Towers of Manhattan, in terms of any preparations that may have been going on? Because again, people do struggle with the idea that nobody was injured in such a busy spot where, you know, I mean, I think the research shows that those buildings had been empty for quite a while. But how did they get people who were walking around in the vicinity of the towers out? Was there some sort of a drill in the early morning or the evening before around that particular part of Manhattan?
Well, they tell us that FEMA arrived for some weird reason the day before and had a drill going on. Just by a coincidence, FEMA on September 10 were in Manhattan. Of course, they had to ring off the area. They wouldn't let people go close to the towers. So they just closed a few streets. And it's very easy because Manhattan is, you know, it's an island which finishes there. So you can it's very easily controllable. If you have military, I mean, military is that's what they do. They ring off areas when needed.
And is there any concrete proof that area had been cordoned off in the hours before?
Yes, there are various things that I haven't listed them here now in front of me, but there are many clues that it was not accessible to the public early on in the morning. I even have a friend, actually I have an Italian friend, who happened to be that morning in Manhattan. And he says, I wanted to go up on the towers, on the roof, as many tourists do. And I went early in the morning, but I found that the tube station was closed. The metro, what do you call it? The underground.
Subway.
The subway was closed with the motivation that there was a union strike. So they said, and it was like 7:30 in the morning, he says. So he couldn't get down to the towers. It's only one closed testimony I have, but I have one. I have a friend I know very well. And he says that this is what happened to him. So, and there are many other clues that the area was not accessible.
And Simon, and I will put up your compilation of crisis actors after this stream, but why do they do this? Why do they decide to opt for no victims, no casualties, no fatalities? Why do they do it this way when they're planning these?
Okay, that's when you need to go, please read my articles I wrote in 2010, quite a long time ago, 14 years ago, I wrote this, for instance. The rationale of the 9/11 hoax. Would you be okay with reading like this with your perfect English voice? Could you do it?
I should be able to extend my. It's just very small on my screen here, but
I will read it. So ever since day one, the major hurdle for many people to even start considering 9/11 being an inside job has been, I can't believe my own government would murder 3,000 of their own people, right? But once that psychological obstacle is removed, it should become apparent that the whole operation consisted essentially of a covert demolition of a redundant asbestos-filled building complex. To kill thousands of people in the process never was an envisaged proposition, as it would have encountered severe resistance among the insiders involved. I mean, just think about if you would say to Matt Lauer or any of the TV anchors, hey, guys, tomorrow we are going to kill 3,000 people in Tara, but we are going to fake it on TV. Are you okay with that? No, it wouldn't work. But if they told those TV anchors, this is a simulation, we're just going to tell the people that there are people who will die in the towers because we need some amount of casualties. Otherwise, it's not a terrorist attack. So, of course, they would go along with that. They're paid millions a year, all these TV anchors and anchor women.
So and they don't get the jobs unless they've been compromised or blackmailed, unless they have skeletons in their cupboards that they need. That's how they do it.
Yes.
They're not going to, say, expose it.
No. And then, the absolute aggravation of having 3,000 white collar workers in the middle of Manhattan all working for Wall Street or for big insurance companies. You wouldn't like to do that. You wouldn't like to have 3,000 important families asking questions. You don't want to kill 3,000 Americans in the middle of Manhattan. That's stupid, it would be absolutely counterproductive. But the thing is, what we know, that the towers were emptied in 1993 totally, and there is this book, Divided We Stand. Do you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, this book is called Divided We Stand. It was issued in 1999. It was published in 1999, and it's by a guy called Eric Darton. And it's like a biography of the Twin Towers. He talks about the Twin Towers, what happened during the years, how they became decrepit. They had to go because they're full of asbestos.
Asbestos.
Let's just read the red type here. These are some excerpts from his book. The towers were already falling apart in the mid-90s, the 1980s.
Yeah.
Then this other one. I'm just jumping ahead because we don't have so much time.
They were built in the late 60s, weren't they? They were built to be demolished.
Yeah. Yes, probably. I mean, who knows, how many people worked there. I'm sure some people worked there for a while. But in 1983, this is where I'm getting to. Following the 1983 bombing, do you remember that there was a bombing supposedly by, the evil Muslim Al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. they put a bomb apparently in the garage and six people apparently died. Well, after that, after this bombing, 50,000 World Trade Center workers were evacuated and relocated outside the World Trade Center. Imagine. So it was completely emptied in 1983. So the February 1983 blast in the basement of the World Trade Center killed 6 people, injured 1,000 others, displaced 50,000 workers. So this happened. This is officially, you know, we know that they emptied all the original historical tenants. You know, they were placed in other office spaces. So what happened after then? What happened between 1983 and 2001? Did they remain empty? You would ask. Well, you know what they did? At the end of the 1990s, huge quantities of office space were advertised for rent in the press. And to make a long story short, you know how they advertised this? You could buy, if you had a company in Los Angeles and you wanted a prestigious place in New York, you could rent it. You could rent a space virtually, a virtual space.
An address, yes.
An address, yeah. So that's how they, so they could have, you know, on paper, they would, the towers would be repopulated. But it was a fictitious repopulation. So repopulation. So maybe they were absolutely empty for the last few years. I don't know. We can know exactly when they became totally empty, but they were empty in 1983. That's what we know.
Yeah. Right? So it's very interesting. And people who went to the top of the towers to go to the top to do the tourist thing, you know, would have gone straight up on the lift. They wouldn't have been on the elevator.
Yeah, that lift. Mm-hmm. I went in that lift in the 1980s when I was very young.
Me too.
I went up there. Yeah, and someone pointed out to me. Someone had showed me. Someone emailed me and said, "You know, I made a picture of the buttons in the lift. There were like four buttons only. It didn't stop at all 110 stories. There were only four. One to the restaurant. One to some other floor." It was a very special elevator.
It was. I remember that.
Yeah.
Very strange. Very strange. Cantor Fitzgerald, you know, there's always been a sort of an Irish angle with them because of the surname Fitzgerald. Yeah. They were really in on the scam.
They are.
The company that.
We watched this, I think, in our last podcast, Gemma.
We did.
Shall we watch 1 minute of it? This is
the CEO
of Cantor Fitzgerald, Howard Lutnick, being interviewed several years later about him losing 657 workers. That's like 1/4 of all the supposed death toll. This guy was apparently is the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald. And look at, I mean, please just let's watch this and decide for yourself if this guy is genuine, dependable, if you would buy a used car from him, okay?
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're getting audio there.
You don't get the audio?
No. Wait. Maybe.
I think you have to send that. Probably my screen share won't include the audio, I guess. But this is absolutely a must watch. Anyone watching, take a note of this video and watch this guy crying like a baby.
Yeah, I think we can get him up here. He's a bad actor, that's for sure.
Very, very poor actor. And I remember my mother was 85 at the time and just laughing to tears watching this guy. I mean, this is an actor, she says. He can't be a real CEO of a big brokerage company.
Of the 1,000 Cantor employees at the Trade Center, only 300 are accounted for at this time, and none was at the building at that time. This immense human loss has truly devastated the chairman and CEO, Howard Lutnick, whose own brother is missing and presumed dead. You have suffered such great professional and personal loss. What is the fate of your brother?
Well, my brother.
You think that's him?
Outburst. I'm sorry. Cut that, baby.
What was the outburst? I didn't hear it. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. No, I was talking to my Swedish friends, and I just showed them when we have this picture come out of his supposed brother, it is obviously his own picture when he was younger. He's using his own picture from his photo book.
Looks like it.
To present his own brother who supposedly died. Because he says he lost his brother in the towers.
They do that all the time with these, you know, yeah. They always use their siblings or their twin that they didn't have, but they pretend.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of this.
Such great professional and personal loss. What is the fate of your brother?
Well, my brother was on the 103rd floor. He worked for me, and he worked at Canner, and he called my sister. Just after the plane hit, and he told her that he said that the smoke was pouring in. He was stuck in a corner office. There was no way out, and the smoke was coming in. And he's not good, and things are not good, and he's not going to make it. And he just wanted to say that he loved her, and he wanted to say goodbye, and tell everyone that he loved them. And then the phone went dead. So while I'm the head of the company, I'm trying to help my 700 employees who are missing their loved ones. I'm just another one of them. Just another one of them.
Normally, you would have been in your office on which floor?
105th floor.
On the 105th floor. And yet you didn't go in early that morning because of a critical decision you made.
My little boy, I have a five-year-old, and it was his first day of kindergarten at this man. So I took him for his first day of big boy school. And because of that, I was in the office. And therefore, I wasn't in the building. I was on my way to the building.
And when you got to the building?
Well, I saw the building on fire, so I didn't go in.
Oh.
But I stood at the door off of Church Street. Where there were flags there, and I stood at that door, and people were coming out, and I was yelling at them, you know, to run and get out. And there were police sort of around me, yelling at people, telling them to get out. And I would ask them what floor they were coming from, Someone would say 55, and I'd scream, "We have 55!" And because I kept wanting to get up the building and get
people out of
the building.
Because all your employees were on
101 to 105, the top floors of number one World Trade Center, which they call now the North Tower.
So how high was the height?
I think we've had enough of him. Boy, they must have some on him. I mean, the brother's story is just so ridiculous. There's no way you would be on the phone. You would be doing your absolute best to get
that. No, but Gemma, but then
your life.
It's such an absurd interview, this one, right? And it gives away the whole thing about people dying and not dying because, I mean, why would he says that he stayed by the door and asked people from which floor they were coming from. And what kind of story is that? and asking them, I come from floor 55. Yeah, so what? And all right. But then the rest of the interview is even funnier. Of course, but the story of him, you know, saving his life because he went to bring, he brought his child to the kindergarten. Isn't that wonderful? It's the same story as Larry Silverstein, who had bought the towers apparently, and he also had some
appointments to see him.
So, really, people who use their brains, I'm sorry to say this, must understand that this is a theater. This is a complete theater. And with actors, they've all been groomed. Groomed, what do you say in English? They've been instructed to say what they had to say. And that's how you pull off this thing. And again, there was absolutely no need, and it would be absolutely counterproductive to kill people for real. But of course, they needed to uphold the idea that people died. So now they have actors, which you're now showing. This is another video I made
of only 10 minutes. It's a 10-minute video I made after my long documentary. Because I kept finding these few actors that go around the world, and they're saying, they always start weeping when they talk about their child who died in a terrorist or so. And they're repeating the same script every time all over the world. And why would they even do that? You know, why would you travel around the world and talk about, you know, you lost your loved one in a terrorist?
To reinforce the lie. This is the one that Irish people ask about, the Irish priest, the homo, the sodomite, Father Michael Judge, M-Y-C-H-A-L. Mm. I've never seen it spelled like that before.
Yes. Victim number one.
Victim number one. What's the story with him? Remind us again about this big lie.
About Father Judge?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, here you can see a picture. Apparently, they're bringing him out, and then sadly, he died. But he looks very much alive here, doesn't he? what details do you want to know from Michael Judge?
Well, how do you explain the PSYOP in this one? You know, because, I mean, apparently, they're talking about canonizing him now.
Oh, really? Oh, well,
what's the backstory, do you think, with him? You know, how did they get rid of him? Or
There's so many ways of, you know, making people disappear, you know, in this area of at least level of PSYOPs, they can make people disappear. That's not any problem for them. I mean, they rule everything. They rule the media, they control everything. So to make a person disappear, even if he was known in his community, it's not that difficult, and they do it all the time.
Yeah, I'd say he had some serious issues with his
he was Irish American, was he?
Sex life. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. I'd say he had some dark secrets there, Simon, that we mightn't want to go into. So possibly that's why he was deployed for the hoax, for the movie.
Yeah, I haven't looked so much into Father Judge, so I can't give you more details about him. But you know, it's tiring, you know, to look at all these various people involved. There are so many. It's like they have an army. They have an army of actors and gatekeepers. One of the, as I mentioned before, one of the top gatekeepers is this Judy Wood woman. Yeah. What her task? Maybe I've said this before, but I will repeat it. Her task is to uphold the credibility of the imagery, because she made a big book, very expensive book, called "Where Did the Towers Go," and she shows all the images I have seen hundreds of times. I'm very familiar with the same images. They have just a small archive. It's a relatively small archive of imagery of 9/11. I recognize every picture in her book. I've seen them before. So she uses her theory to, you know, try to validate those pictures, because she bases her scientific conclusion that they must have used a secret weapon on looking at the imagery and looking at the tower collapses, saying, look, they become powder, they get pulverized, but they are fake pictures. They are from a Hollywood movie. It's like you would say, you go and watch a Hollywood movie one night, and then you go home and try to make it justify what you saw as if it had been real. You understand what I'm saying? There are so many Hollywood movies, catastrophe movies, showing incredible things that are absurd. It can't happen in real life. But we never think about how much those movies are completely made in a studio, and they could very well do that for an operation like this, and that's what they did.
They had a ready-made movie. Everything was prepared. They had pre-recorded even the live broadcasts. They must have. They pre-recorded them. And if you listen to the things the anchormen say, it becomes obvious that they had the script they read from. Do you know, for instance, a little detail, that only 41 seconds after the second plane hit on live TV, some anchorman said, yeah, this must be Bin Laden.
it must be a
Bin Laden job.
I remember that, planting the seeds, planting. But getting back to Judy Wood, just briefly, you know, she is the queen of the controlled opposition in the truth, in 9/11 truth industrial complex. Yes. And in her whole purpose.
She has such a great following. I'm amazed. There's so many people that when they see my movie, but then they ask me, hey, well, but what about Judy Wood then? Well, you're not understanding what I'm saying. There were no real pictures of it. Tower collapses. They collapse behind a smoke screen. That's this. The oldest trick in military operations. You cover the place you want to attack with smoke, so an enemy won't understand what's going on. And the enemy in this case was us, the public.
Right. But her function is to justify the missing rubble, and I think this is a very interesting. You've drawn attention to this.
Well, there was no missing rubble. They just drove it away very quickly. There were hundreds of big trucks bringing away the rubble to Freshkills Island, which, I mean, they say that officially.
Well, I know they say that. I know. But if the buildings were empty, they were empty. You know, they did not have 7,000 fixtures, 75,000 phones, 3,000 victims, cell phones, 45,000 desks. 45,000 chairs, 245 acres of carpeting, 40,000 filing cabinets, 40,000 cubicles, 50,000 staplers, etc. All of that was just absent. And it would have been all over New York. It wouldn't have just been in the immediate environment.
Absolutely.
So her role. That's her role to explain that away. Oh, it was all pulverized.
Exactly. You got it, Gemma. Finally. I mean, sorry. There are so few people who get it. It's very, very simple. They had to explain a huge smoke cloud, you know, lots of microparticles lingering in the air for 8 hours. Oh, it must be a very secret weapon that does that. So people will fall for it. No, the whole thing is just to cover up for the smoke screen, which was made with you know, very vulgar smoke machines, very simple stuff. They used that, I mean, the Second World War, when they went attacking a village, they threw smoke over it. They had smoke machines, very efficient already then. Imagine what kind of smoke machines they had in 2001. Like in a few seconds, they would cover a whole of Lower Manhattan with them. So, exactly. But I promised you not to, when we talked before we started the show, I promised you to remember to show you this article from ABC News.
Yes.
Are you sharing my screen now?
Yes, yep.
This is quite interesting, you see, talking about the victims, you know, the supposed victims. So this is an article from September 20, 2001. That's 9 days later. 9 days later. What can we read in this short article? All right. We read that the number of people believed missing or dead in the attack on the World Trade Center swelled by more than 900, from 5,422 to 6,333 today, largely because of new victim lists submitted from abroad, New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani said. So it was the official mayor who said that there was a sudden increase of 911 people, because the difference between 633 and 5422 is exactly 911. So you see how they're playing with us all the time?
Yep, all the time with their numbers.
This is exactly a 9/11, 9/1/1 difference between these two final official death tolls, right? I only noticed this much later. I only found this article much later. So they are always playing around with us, and they are maybe, you know, laughing at our gullibility to even buy into this. But now the question is, how could they possibly have been wrong by, you know, by more than 3,000 people nine days later? It's not like there was a huge fire in the African jungle where you can't really find all the people immediately. It was in Europe City. Everyone was very much listed on all kinds of. How can you be so wrong? 9 days later, they were saying 6,000 people died, and now it's 2,977 on Wikipedia. I mean, ask yourself this question. So, this is absurd that it could have been so wrong 9 days later. Why, you understand?
Yeah, they got away with it.
But of course, we have also seen, you know, Sandy Hook and so many other events where also there they have fumbled the numbers and we can't find the families. It's just their modus operandi. They do these operations. They don't kill anyone, but it's just. And you ask me, why would they do it? Well, that's a long story. In this case, 9/11 was, you know, go to Iraq, Afghanistan, take over their, you know, maybe their pop, you know, poppies. It's Afghanistan.
Heroin
trade, you know.
Protect Israel, who were behind.
Iraq is oil, you know. It's, yeah. Why did they do it? Because America is always trying to conquer something. They're addicted to wars and to create havoc in the world. So this is not so strange. So are you now? I mean, I hope the listeners, I mean, think about this little article. How can the, I mean, 6333 also, it looks like a very, you know, Kabbalistic number. I'm not into the numerology, okay? I'm not into it, but it becomes silly. There's so many, they play around with these numbers all the time. Like, for instance, the four planes, you know what they were called? You realize that the four planes were 11, 12, 13, 14? You see my screen now?
There you go. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Flight 11. You know, Flight 11 was the first plane who struck the first hour. Flight 11. Okay. Flight 93 is 9 plus 3, 12. Flight 175 is 13. And Flight 77 is 14. Is that just a coincidence? This sequence? Huh? But I really don't want to dwell on the numerology. It's not my, you know, my field of. I know people are obsessed with that, but there are so many instances that it appears that they are also, you know, playing around with our minds with these numbers.
Yeah, I know, most definitely, because it doesn't always tally.
I'm sure a statistician would say this is one in a million chance that.
Well, true.
Now I'm showing you a picture. It's taken straight from a movie made in 1998. It's called Armageddon. Okay? So I did this, you know, this comparison. In your honest opinion, because down here we have what we saw on TV. This is from a high definition, the best definition file I could find, from the NBC archives of the day. I mean, compare this to this. I think the Armageddon picture looks more realistic than what we saw on 9/11 on TV. Yes. This looks like a real cartoon, totally. With a huge helicopter there, very badly sized. But here it looks, yeah, you know, Armageddon was about meteorites falling on Manhattan and destroying half of the tower, the top of the tower. 1998, 3 years before. So here's another, you know, predictive programming Hollywood movie.
Absolutely. Getting them ready, getting them ready. And the fact that they swallowed it, you know, and those that were involved in the PSYOP that carried it out, they got away with it. Well, that laid ground for the scandemic. And, you know, there's many people today, like if they had looked into the Twin Towers hoax, they may not have, you know, taken the poison vaccine. They may be alive today, you know, but they weren't discerning. They just swallowed it hook, line and sinker.
Yep.
And as a result, we got COVID. You know, we got the COVID hoax. Mm. We've got all the other hoaxes ever since, because they must have thought, we got away with this, we can get away with anything.
Yes, exactly. So here is Independence Day. Here's a clip from Independence Day. You see how the tower, Empire State Building collapses?
Yes.
Top down. Just like we saw the Twin Towers go down on TV.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's the same thing, isn't it?
And you see, we have lots of people running down the street. People will say, oh, they can't fake that. But why they faked it in this movie, for God's sake? It looks very realistic, kind of, you know, cars flying. And they can do this. It's amazing how people say, many people say, no, it's too complicated to make you know, a whole 102-minute movie supposedly being a real event. No, it's not. Hollywood has done it for years. It's their job to make fake imagery.
Yeah.
That's, look at this one. I mean, look at this one here. Why does it get all white? You know, they do some mistakes sometimes. I mean, this wouldn't happen with any normal camera. At one stage, it's completely, it gets washed out. Look, just for a second. And this washed out thing is found on so many different clips. For some reason, they fuck up, sorry, their green screen or whatever they're using. And suddenly, half of the picture disappears. So it's obviously montages. There's no question about it anymore. Only people who are in denial will continue thinking that these are pictures, real life pictures. And this is what people saw. I like this picture because this could be a real picture. But what do you see? Just lots of smoke. If you had snapped this picture yourself, Gemma, and you said, oh, I snapped this picture at 9:58. That's before the first tower collapsed. And I didn't see the tower collapse. Where would you go? Would you go to the police station? Would you go to CNN to protest about the fact that you didn't see the actual collapse? You only saw smoke.
Yeah.
You couldn't go anywhere to protest. You know, they would say, oh, you were not in the right position. You were in a wrong angle. Other people saw the tower collapse from north, and you were in the south. That's what they will say.
And you'd be bundled into the back of an ambulance and medicated, thrown into an asylum.
Right? Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Not released until you were, you know, clear in your head that you were never going to repeat this.
Yeah. But you see what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that these pictures might be real, but we don't see anything. I mean, the towers are completely covering an incredible amount of smoke. And like it's like enormous cloud, which we never see at any demolition site. Not so much. Not that much. I'm sorry.
No, not that much smoke. No.
Never. And not that lasts for 8 hours. It will never happen.
Now, Simon, remind people again about the people coming out of the windows and how that was staged. I know you're blue in the face, but we have to repeat.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm happy with that. Well, then we can go to my website and we can go to the Let's see now. Here is. I mean, I think people don't notice this this list here. These are the articles you want to read and the places you want to go to, you know, on my website. So you have imagery analysis here. And so I've divided them in airplane animations, collapse animations, Pentagon and Shanksville, and about simulated sceneries in general. So we go here and click here, and we go to the jumpers. Okay, jumpers here. And I want people to look at my website. It's taking me time to compile all this. So
yeah, which is, again, septemberclues.org. Yeah.
Please, people, I realize people don't even know how to get in to find these sub-articles, but okay, it's not so hard to find. So the jumpers. So what are we looking at here? This is from a movie. Okay, we see this guy falling down. Oh, he looks like a guy falling down from a tower. Yeah, sure. But that's a movie. It's from a movie.
It's CGI.
It's absolutely, you know, a movie. So, but this is supposed to be real. This is a guy who apparently took first one guy falling, and then this 1, 2, 3 is from the same video of the same guy who apparently filmed three guys falling. So number one here, as you can see, he falls at a certain place here on the bottom building here, there. And then he took another one. He also caught that and followed him all the way down. He zoomed in first on it. And then this is absolutely almost impossible to do. You must be a Superman videographer too. And then a third one. So we are supposed to be, this guy caught three guys falling down within seconds. Three guys falling down. This is totally CGI. The jumpers were CGI as well. And there were no dummies that people saying, oh, they threw out dummies from the windows. No, it's all made in a studio. So I call him Joe Wonder. He scores 3 out of 3, you know. 1, 2, 3. I call him Joe Wonder. And then what about the paratroopers? Look at this. These three guys apparently jumped out, you know, one after the other, maybe a second from each other. But one falls down very far from the side of the tower. He is much closer. How has this happened? There was not a hurricane going on. The day they should have fallen down straight down. This guy is like 25 meters from the side of the tower. This guy holding hands. One has feet, the feet on fire. I mean, it's a joke. These pictures are jokes. And then there was another one with the same guy, but not holding hands anymore. These are official pictures I found during the years. I didn't make this up. I mean, you know, the suspicion will be, oh, maybe Simon Schachter has faked his pictures to make his case. No, I swear. These are pictures that have been published on...
No, they have. They've won prizes.
Newspapers. Newspapers.
Yeah.
So at the end of this little page, I have this funny, I don't know where it comes from, maybe from another Hollywood movie, where you see people falling down. But of course, that's not real. But it looks very realistic, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Those people look real, falling down in that hole. So it's perfectly doable.
And the jumpers are obviously to add to the drama and the,
it was very important. The trauma.
The trauma and, you know, because the more traumatized the public are, the less they are likely to use their brains and start thinking, hang on a minute, am I actually watching a movie? But, you know, if we think about being in those towers, if they were burning down, which if there were people in there, you would not jump. You wouldn't jump because that would be for certain death. You would keep running down the stairwell until your lungs gave up on you. That's what you would do because you would know that is the only way out. If I jump, I'm definitely going to die. There isn't going to be some trampoline waiting at the end, at the bottom of the building.
That's exactly, That's true, but also see it this way: the jumper served multiple purposes. The trauma, you know, oh my God, this evil terrorist, they had people making them jump to their deaths. But it served the very crucial idea that there were people in the towers.
Exactly.
Simply. Oh, there are many people. Some were so desperate that they jumped out. And how they broke the windows, which were bulletproof, we don't know. But, you know, that's another question.
Yep.
Yep. Anyway, yeah. It's all CGI. That's what is important to understand.
I always get, like, I know tonight in the comments, you know, not necessarily in the live chat here, because everyone seems to be very much on board, but maybe in the comments on BitChute, there'll always be somebody who says, oh, a friend of mine was a farm man who died, etc. And people say, you know, how did they get all of these farm men and police to lie? Now, I just say to people, do you remember what happened during the COVID scandemic? Do you remember that it was the police, the medical, the emergency people who were the most corrupt in all of it, you know, lying through their teeth, forcing the jab on people, forcing people to wear masks? So these people, these, you know, police, fire, emergency services are highly corrupt and more than capable of being in on something like this, because they're controlled. They're Freemasons. You know, the Freemasonic brotherhood has fully infiltrated those professions. Yes, Simon?
No, I just wanted to say that I'm almost thankful for the goofy COVID thing they did, because it has opened minds to people.
It has.
The possibility that they are that evil, or whatever you want to call it, or stupid. I mean,
nurses dancing nurses during a pandemic. Come on,
they have done a great mistake, unless they have some other agenda. I'm not saying I understand exactly what they're thinking of. What are they? What are they aiming at? What is their agenda? But obviously, it is very strange and very. It's psychopathic, right? So these people are psychopaths, and we know psychopaths exist. I don't think that's a conspiracy theory. I have a brother who was my own brother is a psychopath, so I know about that. So what I'm showing you now is the miracle zooms. Should we take us a minute looking at that?
Absolutely. Yeah, talk us through what we're looking at.
Yeah, these are the most famous, you know, apparently some of them are apparently amateur videos, some of them from the live broadcast. Note one thing: if you have some notion of what it means to have a video camera in your hand, you know, you're looking at a spectacular event, are you going to zoom in exactly when the action happens? No, you're going to lose. If you have a handheld camera, you want to use the zoom in thing. It will be very hard to do. And look at this first one here. This lady, this was supposedly filmed by a lady who was also a media girl. She zooms in right as the planes arrive and exactly catches it when it touches the side of the tower. All right. The same does another guy who was also a media guy. He zooms in exactly when the would he even see the plane coming in his
it's in his amazing camera? What a coincidence.
But it's not only two, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 instances of exact perfect zoom ins at the right time without losing the subject, you know, the plane, without losing it from, you know, from the frame of your visor. No, they will always zoom in. And even during the collapses, they zoom in just before they start to make it look, you know, more spectacular, I guess. But that's unnatural. This would never happen in real life. The guy was filming the towers that were smoking. And how could he know the exact moment when it starts? Because he zooms in just as it starts collapsing. Here's another zoom in. That's from the live broadcasts. Zoom in just before the impact. Here's another one. Here's another one. I mean, just take some time looking at these zoom ins and zoom outs. This is, you know, for any rational person, this is complete proof of manipulation. This is total proof. This is slam dunk as well. I mean, at every single page that I've done here to show all the work we've done to show the fakeness of the imagery is compelling. Every single page I've done here is compelling. It has its own, you know, what is this? Suddenly we have a black and white. This was Arnold Fox. And suddenly, look, it goes all white. This was air light, live on Fox. See how it falls and bang, everything goes white. How do you explain it, Gemma? I mean, you're a journalist, you must know something about...
I know that my former colleagues lie through their teeth at every time they open their mouth, so...
How can anyone justify this? I didn't make this washed out white frame at the end. It was shown.
Wow.
You must believe me. I didn't, you know, certainly I didn't make it myself. So That's the problem here. We have, look at this. I mean, what is this about? Look at these few seconds, which were air live. Well, on the History Channel. You see, there's a History Channel sign here. This is from the History Channel. They didn't even bother correct those gross mistakes. Right?
Incredible. Yeah. It's really in your face, isn't it? Like, it's so obviously.
It's in your face.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it goes on and on. You know, imagine my patients going through all this.
Oh, you've done absolutely Trojan work, Simon, on it. I mean, you really have. And you've been completely ostracized by the truth, so-called truth movement, which is not a truth movement at all. All these architects and engineers for 9/11, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't speak to you in a million years.
No one
they wouldn't have anything to do with you.
Yeah. No one of them have of these, you know, most famous gatekeepers, of course, and they never contacted me. But in the beginning, I was on Jim Fetzer wanted to talk to me, but I just declined because I knew he would just, with his fast talk, he would just, you know, crush me with his fast talking. So I didn't want to play that game.
But, although he did interview Phil Jahan. Who I have also interviewed. And actually, I thought he was quite open. I don't trust Fetzer for a minute, but I thought he was quite open-minded.
I didn't interview Phil Jahan, did I?
Fetzer did, didn't he?
Oh, Fetzer interviewed Phil Jahan. Yeah.
I think he did, yeah, because I think that's where I heard about Phil Jahan, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Who seems to have gone, he's gone underground again, but...
Yeah, his disappearance.
He's disappeared again. Yeah, we found him, and he did a couple of streams with me. His theories are very similar to yours. He believes, obviously, in the Hollow Towers theory.
Right.
But just getting back to your, before we finish, site at your, I want to get back to your site. How are your friends there? Are they, have they any questions?
They are like good sweet. They're keeping quiet and listening. And how have we done, the two of us? Very well. They like this podcast.
Are they all on board with your theories?
Yes. Four yeses.
Four yeses. What part of Sweden are you from originally, Simon?
I was born in Stockholm, actually.
Oh, you were born in Stockholm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Poor Sweden. It's going through what Ireland is also going through. I think both of our countries have been the most affected by the invaders.
Yeah.
So that's another day's work. But just getting back to your website, I'll just bring it up here. I know you're on it there. But, and also the Clues Forum, actually. which is linked on your site. Has there been anything new in recent years that you have, you feel that you would like to explore more, or even in the last year?
About 9/11?
Yeah, anything that you haven't, like that, you know, you weren't aware of at the time when you were making?
Not really. I mean, of course, we have added things every year on the forum, but I then haven't made I should probably make a new version of September Clues with all the new discoveries. But I'm a bit busy now with my solar system research. But yeah, I'm sure one day or another I will do an update, a new version of September Clues with all the new, with some crucial things we found over the years, which obviously is, first of all, is that no one died. There were no victims. And that's not included in my movie. I made it in 2007, 2008. So I hadn't come that far at the time in the research.
Yeah. Well, that is what people find hardest to swallow, but all they need to do is just look at some of the acting, look at some of the testimonies, the interviews. I mean, the people who are reporting, like in the days afterwards, they're just down at the terrace, they're just reading from a script. It's quite obvious that they're reading from a teleprompter or a script. Yes. And it's so fake. It's so obvious.
Sometimes they went really too far. I think it was in 2013 or something. There was this guy who said, "Yeah, I came out alive from the collapses of the towers because I fell down like on a surfing board or something. He fell down during the collapses and survived. And suddenly he saw the blue sky in front of him and he said, 'Oh, God must have saved me.'" There is a guy interviewed on TV that has this story to tell us, that he actually survived the collapses. I can't remember his name now, and I haven't saved it, but I think if you look for him, you will find him. You know, those kind of exaggerated, really stupid stories have come out over the years. They need to they have to uphold the 9/11 story, and they have just lost even, you know, simple control of reality. You know, I mean, they don't even care, because they see that most people bought everything, hook, line, and sinker, so they don't even care to make absurd stories. And every year there is a new story coming out, you know. And also there are every 2 years or so, 1-2 years or so, they have someone saying, "Yeah, I also filmed the plane crashing, but kept the tape in a drawer all these years, and now I decided to put it up on YouTube."
Amazing.
This is the case for the last three videos that have come out, you know, which never seen before videos. And all these authors, I mean, supposed authors, which have a YouTube channel, they give their name and surname, whoever they are, and they say, I just decided to release this because, you know, it was about time. I've kept it in a drawer.
Imagine.
But of course, the purpose of this is just to remind us that so many people film it, you know, amateur videos. People film it from the ground. So
exactly. I mean, in terms of getting these crisis actors on board for this SIAP and others, you know, these people are paid an awful lot of money. And often, as in the case of Manchester, you know, they have things that need to be covered up. I'm sure it's the same at 9/11. So they're offered this package and their lives will be transformed. They'll never need to work a day in their lives. So people we know are highly immoral by and large nowadays, and money drives them. Yeah. And so that's how they get them to do it.
Yeah. Oh, one of my Swedish friends here is suggesting me to tell this about the
statistics of, you know, people, so and so many people die every day in New York, okay? And yeah. Someone went to look, this wasn't my research, but someone else did this research. And there was no difference on September 11, 2001 of the daily deaths in New York. There's no significant difference. There should have been 3,000 more people.
Yep.
They weren't
registered, I think, with the...
They didn't even try to make it look realistic.
No, they didn't, because they just assume nobody will ever question it. If they do, well, we'll make sure that they're censored and banned like we are. So that's the way they do it. But unless there is anything else, Simon, that you want to add, thank you so much. As always, that has been so informative.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, more and more people understand the truth. And that's thanks to you and all the great work you've done. So it's worthwhile. Everything you've done is really worthwhile. And one day you'll be properly recognized.
Well, it feels good to hear that. Thank you, Gemma. It feels good. It's been a bit frustrating to go through all these years with people saying that that I'm the most crazy of all researchers, you know. Wow. So
That's a badge of honor.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. Thanks. The only thing I would add to finish this is what I'm showing here. It's the National Institute of Standards and Technology. You can find it still on their website. They concluded that Tower 1 and Tower 2 collapsed respectively in 9 seconds and the other one in 11 seconds. Isn't that in your face? I mean,
in your face. Isn't that
Mel Brooks, Jewish New York viewer? I mean, that's too much. That's too much.
You couldn't make it up.
And the problem is that, but this is official, okay? I tell you, you can go, it's still there. It's still on the NIST official site. They have determined that 9 in 11 seconds is the time they took to fall down to the ground. First of all, they were at the same height. Why would one collapse in 20% faster, 20% faster than the other?
Yeah, exactly. That,
you know, if you're a physical man, if you're a scientist, you would ask yourself, why would one collapse so much faster than the other? But then, yeah, the biggest problem is that what CNN showed, that there was a, you know, from a helicopter view, apparent helicopter view, they show the full collapse of one of the towers, and it takes 18 seconds for its collapse, at least 18 or 20 seconds. So it doesn't even match the pictures they showed us.
Exactly. Yeah. No, they're rubbing our noses in it there,
they're
really.
They're rubbing our noses.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is their favorite pastime. Well, look, I just want to remind people to go to your septemberclues.org website and also into the Clues Forum for lots of up-to-date information.
Yeah.
And do make sure everyone to watch September Clues, Simon Schaech's brilliant documentary, even though we definitely do need to update it to add in the lack of injuries and fatalities, definitely. Right. Obviously, that is the core. You know, once people understand that, then it's very liberating, you know, to know that.
Yes, that's what I mean. It should be liberating. I remember when we started with, I had a friend from America helping me, Max, and we said, hey, Max, I told him, now that we're looking at all these fake faces in the memorials, and we're concluding that they must be all photoshopped, will people now tell us that we are trying to, you know, get the perpetrators off the hook because they didn't kill anyone? We were a bit worried about that, and right on time, somebody said that when we released the victim report. People were saying, look,
Simon Shack is actually, you know, on the side of the perpetrators because he's trying to protect them from having killed 3,000 people.
Oh.
I've been through many funny moments.
I'm sure you have. And I'd say there's going to be a few more ahead, possibly.
Yeah.
But, no, anyway, well done.
Thank you so much. It's been fantastic. I know you want to keep your podcast not too long, so.
Well, no, we've taken up enough of your time, and you need to get back to your guests. And I know you have a big trip coming up to, well, it's October, is it, or November?
End of October, 28th, going to the Bay Area in San Francisco for a conference presenting my Taikos model. But that's a whole another story. This is for another.
To do with your research on astronomy. Right over my head, but people can find they can read about it on your September Clues website. There's a link, isn't there, to your Taikos website there, I think.
No, there's no link there, but
you
only have to remember taikos.space. That's my website where I have, you can read my book for free there. You can download the PDF. It's a 320-page book. And if you're interested in astronomy, please go there.
Most definitely. I'm sure people will. Mm-hmm. So, Simon, hopefully it won't be as long the next time, and you'll come back again soon. But in the meantime, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll be back. We'll hopefully be back again with you soon. And thank you to everyone in the live chat this evening for all of your very interesting observations. Sorry I didn't get to read them out, but I appreciate you being there. So for this evening, I'll leave you. I'll be back tomorrow evening with Professor or Dr. E. Michael Jones. But for now, I'll say good night. And Simon, take care. Enjoy your trip with your friends. And God bless everyone. Take care.
All right. God bless you too. Take care.